my family lost their home. They had worked so hard to be able to afford a really modest townhome outside of Chicago. Rich bankers got bailed out and no one lost their jobs and no one lost their homes who were politically elite and connected. I think 10 million families who lost their homes. I think that that's special and cool about Bitcoin, the fact that for everyone, it serves sort of a different purpose and it brings us all together. And whether you're a wealthy person trying to diversify or someone who's disenfranchised and coming from absolutely nothing, you can start to accumulate and build wealth in something that can never be confiscated or manipulated.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Bitcoin Way podcast. I'm your host, Michael Jordan. I appreciate you being here. I just wrapped up a very fun conversation with the great Natalie Brunell. We talked all about orange pilling, bringing friends and family into Bitcoin and some of the objections she gets, strategies she uses to explain what's wrong with our monetary system today and the promise that Bitcoin offers. We also talked about an event that she has coming up in September in St. Louis that she's going to be hosting, trying to bring no-coiners and pre-coiners into Bitcoin and explaining what it is, why it's important, how to custody it, how to buy it, all of those great things. So she's doing some really cool work, obviously on a broad scale for many of you who know her, but even in her local community here in St. Louis, where I happen to be as well. So I hope you enjoy my conversation with Natalie. All righty, everyone. Like I said in the intro, I've got Natalie with me. Natalie, welcome to the Bitcoin Way podcast.
Hi, it's great to see you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good to have another St. Louisan or, adoptee of St. Louis on the show. Yeah. Natalie, I know we're actually a little bit short on time today, but I want to spend our time talking about orange pilling because I'm not really sure that there's anyone who does it better than you. You have a very interesting background in journalism, and I think that is probably one of the reasons you're so articulate in sharing the Bitcoin gospel with people. Could you just start by setting the stage? How did you come into Bitcoin? Maybe give a little bit of your background and how it led you down the rabbit hole.
Well, first of all, that's very nice of you. I'm still improving my orange pill strategy because I still have friends who are not in Bitcoin, so that tells you something. So, I mean, I don't know how far you want to go back, but I feel like the Bitcoin seed was planted very early in my life. My family immigrated from Poland. Parents grew up under communism. I grew up with parents that were very skeptical of government and who really believed that people should have the ability to access education, work really, really hard, and basically, you know, determine their own destiny, which is sort of what the American dream stands for, right? My family really wanted to come here for opportunity and social mobility. And I watched them work super, super hard. I pursued journalism and my parents really wanted me to become a doctor or a lawyer. If anyone watching this comes from an immigrant family. But I was just so enamored with media. We watched a lot of movies and television and news growing up because it really helped my parents learn English. For me, it was really easy because I was 5 years old, so I picked it up a lot faster. And I just thought, what a cool industry. I loved stories, and I thought journalists had such a noble job. They got to travel the world and interview important people. And I felt like their job was to basically learn every day, and I loved to learn. So I studied journalism. And then I went off to college and the great financial crisis hit and my family lost their home. They had worked so hard to be able to afford a really modest townhome outside of Chicago. And it felt like overnight they lost everything. And I watched as these Wall Street, you know, rich bankers got bailed out and no one lost their jobs and no one lost their homes who were politically elite and connected. But the average American, there were, I think, 10 million families who lost their homes. And I just felt like there was some injustice in that. But I didn't know what caused it, right? I didn't understand money. I didn't understand money printing. So I set off into my journalism career with a little bit of a fire under me because I wanted to hold the powerful accountable. I felt like there was something unfair in the system. And I felt like it was the journalist's role to shine a spotlight on it and kind of like bring it out to the surface. So I was a very determined investigative reporter and I did well with that. It's funny. I think sometimes people watch my show and I tend to do a very positive show. I have a very positive message and I'm not like an interrogator with my guests. But for 10 years or so, I was the person who was chasing down mayors and city officials and like banging down doors. And I felt very frustrated that a lot of them were engaged in public corruption. And so I wanted to shine a spotlight on those stories. But then I discovered Bitcoin and I went down the rabbit hole, and it was like this really transformative moment for me, because the things that I had blamed on politics, like so many people do, I thought it was, oh, we got to tax the rich, or, oh, we've got to elect this person. It just really boiled down to how our financial system works. And I had no idea. And then I went on this amazing educational journey, and I wanted to share that information. And I did not expect my podcast to turn into a career. I just wanted to share the message of Bitcoin and help other people learn about it. And now I'm so grateful to be someone who is educating people on Bitcoin, because I think that it is for everyone. Everyone needs to learn about it. They need to take the time. They need to not, you know, sit there and scold us and oppose it without knowing anything about it, like so many people do. And I just think that it will be the most empowering technology and transformation that we have the opportunity to embrace in the future.
Yeah. So is there a specific attribute of Bitcoin that as you sort of learned about it, you clung to, you said, okay, this is the piece that's been missing that I think solves a particular problem, or was there something that just stood out for you?
I just think it's the economic empowerment, the ability to actually save for your future. So many of us work so hard. And I remember feeling so frustrated that I was excelling in my career and technically getting wage increases every year, every time I got a promotion. And yet I was barely keeping up with the cost of living increases. And I felt less and less hopeful about the future, being able to afford something like a house, which is so core to the American dream, or afford a family, or afford retirement. And it's like, well, why is this? I have my master's degree. I work really hard. I'm working in national broadcast television, and I feel afraid of having a home someday. I mean, so think about, you know, other people who haven't had the opportunity that I have. And I felt like there's something unfair about that, that if you could work so hard and you can't even make it, you're basically treading water because they're constantly inflating the money supply and devaluing your savings. And that benefits the few people and the asset holders. And then everyone else is sort of starting to fight amongst each other because they don't know what else to do. They're frustrated, but they can't pinpoint the source of the problem.
So you mentioned you've got friends and maybe family who haven't been orange-pilled, and I mean, don't worry, you're not alone here. I mean, I think that's a constant struggle, but you know, you mentioned like you bring a lot of positivity, and I think your message is one that seems like it would resonate with a lot of people, right? Like, it's not, hey, Bitcoin's going to be the global reserve currency, but look, you have the opportunity to save. Hey, you can't afford a house. You can't, you know, groceries are getting harder to afford. What is it that you think, like, how do you think about framing this to people? You know, if you're talking to your friend who's not a Bitcoiner, like, what does that first conversation look like?
So I think that it's really important to meet people where they are, and at the beginning, ask more questions than just talking at them, because Bitcoin can, especially at the very beginning, be a little bit intimidating. It can feel a little bit technical, and you really kind of have to start to talk about the problem, which is inflation, which so many people don't understand. I don't think anyone really talked about inflation prior to the CPI eventually getting to 9% as the result of the pandemic stimulus. So it varies for everyone, but I think the challenges that I've had, at least recently, and in certain areas or certain groups of people that I talk to, is they've seen real estate do so well. And so many people are clinging to the idea that real estate is the best investment class. And I've even had this issue with my own family, because they've seen how much homes have appreciated, and people all of a sudden, you know, they're getting investment properties, and you could take out an SBA loan for very little. And then you have this property and that property, and it sounds so glamorous and easy, but it's not. And when you really break it down and peel back the layers, we have financialized what should be just a single family home that people live in. It should be a good for consumption, right? For us to live in and build a family in, and not something that we are turning into savings accounts. But that is the reality. And people have seen real estate do so well, or their friends or family members or someone random online, that they're putting a lot of focus in that investment class, as opposed to saying, hey, you know, let's talk about Bitcoin. Let's talk about the problem that it solves. And that's actually been my biggest challenge. A lot of my millennial friends, especially women, they don't invest in stocks. They might have sort of a passive strategy happening with their 401ks, but they're not sitting there with brokerage accounts day trading. I have some guy friends that do that, but for the most part, my millennial women friends, which I think is a massive audience to crack, especially if you've seen recent data about Bitcoin, they're really not that interested in equities. They're not investing in bonds. And so real estate has really been sort of an area of focus and also success in the fiat world for many people. And so I think that is the asset class that Bitcoiners have to work the hardest to say, well, here are the reasons why Bitcoin as a form of digital property is better. And so I've been working on sort of those messaging points and narratives, because I think that once we, or at least once I do better at explaining why Bitcoin is better than real estate, then I'll get a lot more people on board.
Interesting. So I feel like we suffer from recency bias. And then, like, on top of that, we've been desensitized to massive numbers. So, like, we hear $35 trillion in debt into Bitcoiners. Yeah. That's means something, right? But yeah, to my friend who is, you know, my best friend is not a Bitcoiner. And he hears that maybe in passing on the news. And it just doesn't register with him that this is a ticking time bomb, right? And I think the recency bias kicks in with, well, real estate has performed well, and I've been able to outpace inflation, ignoring the fact that if you want to sell that and, you know, buy a new piece of real estate, or you want to move into a new home, you're paying that price. Your dollar was devalued. Your home didn't really appreciate. Okay, so to the extent that you have orange-pilled some people in your life, family or friends, what has been what's worked? Like, could you talk a little bit about what has resonated with them?
Yeah, again, it depends on the person. Obviously, number go up really helps when you show them the logarithmic price chart. It sort of speaks for itself. The fact that it has been pretty much the best performing asset when you compare it to everything the majority of years, if you look back at the last decade. So that's number one, at least for helping them get to the first step. What's also worked is helping them actually use Bitcoin. So telling them to download a wallet and I will send them Bitcoin, and for them to see, A, how easy it is and how quick it is, and then sort of breaking down the fact that when I sent that amount of Satoshis, there was literally no one in the middle of that transaction. It happened immediately. There's no, you know, waiting days on the back end to settle. There was no asking permission of different banks. It literally just went from me to you. And I think that that's really powerful too. When people are interacting and engaging with the technology with their own devices, that is it's a great, you know, use case, and it speaks to them exactly why Bitcoin is important. If they come from a background where they've had a pain point like me, you know, they lost everything, or their family lost everything, or I've met people who wanted to immigrate to the US decades ago and they couldn't bring the money with them, right? You could only bring like $100 with you. Well, that's a pain point that you would understand why Bitcoin is so important, because you could just memorize a seed phrase and carry your entire wealth with you. So it really just, again, I think depends on the person. I think that sometimes people here in the West who have been privileged to just have kind of 60-40 portfolios in their retirement accounts and do that kind of passive investing that has become so popular, they don't see the need, or they see it as too risky in a way that someone from, say, a background of struggle, poverty, maybe from a developing nation, how they would see Bitcoin. But I think that that's special and cool about Bitcoin, the fact that for everyone, it serves sort of a different purpose and it brings us all together. And whether you're a wealthy person trying to diversify or someone who's disenfranchised and coming from absolutely nothing, you can start to accumulate and build wealth in something that can never be confiscated or manipulated. I think when you look across the entire spectrum of how Bitcoin truly serves every need, it's really inspiring and incredible.
Yeah, I feel like there's like an amount of pain that we haven't quite had yet, at least not in mass, right? Like, I think there's a lower group of, you know, 25-50% of the United States that is probably really struggling day to day. But there's, you know, like, I live in an area, it's, I'd say it's probably generally like upper middle class, people are getting by. They notice gas is more expensive, groceries are more expensive, but they're surviving. And so there's nothing to like shake them out of their complacency, I guess, is maybe the problem that I've witnessed. Is that, would you say that's sort of your observation as well?
Yes, it definitely depends on the communities. And I can relate to that because I grew up as one of the poorest families in a very well-to-do area. My mom chose a suburb outside of Chicago that had really good schools, public schools. So we had this tiny apartment where my parents slept on the sofa, and some of my friends at school had like mansions, and they were just, I was just so amazed by the size of the homes. And so obviously those types of families who have done really well, again, and maybe things like real estate, or some of my friends' family members were early to Microsoft and certain tech equities, they're probably not going to see a problem in the current system as quickly as people like my family, who think that it's so difficult to save and a wage will never allow you to keep up with the pace of the cost of living. But I reported a lot in areas that were very disenfranchised because I've worked all across the country, and it wasn't the upper middle class homes that I was going to the most often. It was the people who were really struggling. So when we would cover issues of education costs or retirement costs or just basic cost of living or just the different struggles, right, day to day. I mean, news runs to the sites of disaster and the bad stuff, not all the great things that are happening. And so I would meet a ton of people that are struggling. And I think that that's one of the reasons why I saw the need for Bitcoin so immediately, because it wasn't just my family, but I saw the struggle my family went through reflected in all these sorts of people that I interviewed. And it was no fault of their own. So many of them worked really, really hard. And you get to a point where you just can't keep up, especially if you're a teacher, a policeman, a hairdresser, someone who's working at a restaurant. Like, how do you keep up with assets inflating the way that they are? It's really, really difficult. And the people who have assets and who are doing better are just a different playing field. And that gap widens and widens the more that they print money. So I really felt for those people because it was like my family, and that's who I try to speak to when I do my show. If you watch my show, it's very focused on like mainstream retail audience, non-technical, all different backgrounds and careers, the mainstream audience, middle class, because those are the people I think who most need this message. They most need it, and I want them to be early so that they can front run all the big institutions and the wealthy people that will eventually get in.
So you brought up your journalism career again. I'm curious, what are some examples of some of the financial corruption that you most prominently witnessed? And like, what were you chasing down that maybe the typical person doesn't realize is happening all over the place every day?
Yeah. So in my first job, which was in Palm Springs, California, tiny, tiny market, I got an investigative Emmy nomination for a piece that I investigated for several years. And it was a corrupt relationship between the mayor of Palm Springs and developers. So he filed paper, mayors and public officials, they have to file paperwork about sources of income and investments that they have. And he had listed on one of the pieces of paper, like a consulting job that he had. And when you pull the records of what is this consulting company, you see that it was a shell company owned by a developer who was putting projects before the city. And what do you think the mayor was doing? Well, when that project would come before the city, he would vote, yes, I would like to see this project in Palm Springs. And he would convince the other city officials to say yes. And so that developer got a special advantage. So other developers might pitch projects that maybe were better or maybe were cheaper, maybe didn't get, wanted to get the tax subsidies that the city was offering. But basically every project that this developer would put forth got the green light. And that developer profited and was also paying the mayor. So uncovering all of that was like a big chase. Eventually FBI descended on City Hall and raided it. And it resulted in a public corruption trial where the mayor was charged with 33 counts. And then fast forward about 4 or 5 years to when I was working in Los Angeles, much bigger market, almost the exact same thing happened, but with an LA city council member and Chinese developers who were putting up massive skyscrapers and benefiting from this corrupt relationship that literally got as salacious as flying this city councilman to Las Vegas, handing over suitcases of cash, prostitutes, like, I mean, wild stuff. But at the core of it is, again, you're taking advantage of your position of power. You're taking advantage of the fact that taxpayers and voters are trusting you to serve them as a public servant, and instead you're enriching yourself. And those stories really frustrated me. I mean, you could see I get very passionate because that's not fair. And if we had a system of money that was, I think, at our core, more fair and just, and it was based on rules, not rulers, then maybe we would have less of this because the incentives would not be aligned to encourage this type of behavior. It would actually incentivize people to be more trustworthy and to create actual value instead of trying to enrich themselves.
Hey there, just a quick break and we'll be right back to the show. I wanted to spend a minute sharing with you how the Bitcoin Way helps individuals achieve self-custody and self-sovereignty over their money, their online life, and having a plan B as an individual. The Bitcoin Way can help you properly custody your Bitcoin using only air-gapped, open-source, Bitcoin-only hardware wallets. We help you set up and run your node. It doesn't matter if you're brand new to Bitcoin, if you've been in Bitcoin 10 years, there's a good chance that there's a gap in your self-custody setup, and we can help resolve that and give you confidence and peace of mind. When it comes to your online life, you are being tracked and watched and spied on by governments, by corporate interests all over the place. We can give you confidence that even logging onto Wi-Fi at your airport or at your local coffee shop, you are protecting yourself and remaining self-sovereign and private. Finally, if you want help adding to your passport repertoire, we've got a citizenship program whereby we establish temporary residency and walk you through the entire process, white glove service, boots on the ground through citizenship. It is important in a time of crazy economic and political upheaval that you have optionality when it comes to where you're going to live, reside, and spend your life. Check out thebitcoinway.com/podcast. You can schedule a free consult with the team to learn more about our services and understand how we can help you achieve full self-sovereignty. I think it was Milton Friedman who said that inflation is always and everywhere a monetary phenomenon. But I understand, like, based on those stories, I think those are the things that people hear about. It's why they think they can vote harder and they're going to find the right person. Someone's going to come save us because they view that is a political problem. And to some degree, it obviously is. You get corrupt people in there, they're going to take advantage of probably any system that we can conjure up. And it's going to affect prices too. Because if the winning bidder is always the company who's, you know, in cahoots with government, they can charge higher rates and it's going to cost people more to live there. But it's so easy, I think, for people to dial in on, like, politics is the problem. And so therefore, the right politics is the solution, and be completely blinded to the monetary implications of what's happening. Like, why are they even empowered to do this? And it's loose money. You know, it's cheap money. It's definitely not a Bitcoin standard. But that is why. Yeah, no, did you have a comment on that?
Well, yeah, I agree. I mean, and we've gotten to a point where because we don't have true capitalism and a base layer of economic activity that's based on ruthless competition. I mean, that capitalism is ruthless competition where there are no bailouts and winners get to win based on value and losers fall away and don't have a backstop, like, you know, grandfather Federal Reserve. And in our system, we encourage monopolies to form. And when they balloon, they get more and more power. And then they can override what the market wants to tell it, which is, hey, there's something else that might be better. But that entity, that organization, that person will have no chance compared to this behemoth that has formed. And you could look at that across every industry. And that's what's happened. And these special interest groups are able to influence politics when you have a monopoly over money and you could get close to the money printer. And that's what's really sad, because you will see at the core of that people taking advantage of the system. And whether that's a massive corporation or a massive union or, I mean, anything that has ballooned to become way too large, especially larger than it would be if you had a true capitalistic system at its core.
Yeah, and we saw a great example of it this week. So I think when asset prices started plunging earlier in the week, I saw a tweet from Preston Pish. He was responding to someone who I think was criticizing Bitcoin for not being a store of value or, you know, something like that, because it was correlated with the markets and went down too. And he said, yeah, isn't this glorious? In Bitcoin, you can't turn off trading. It's a perfectly open, free market, permissionless, uncorruptible system that everyone can dump over the weekend if they want to. Meanwhile, Robinhood's halting trading. It's like all the same things. But again, the problem comes back to education. People hear that and they're like, oh, good. Like there's a safety net here. And it's like, no. Like we don't need a safety net. Like we need things to crumble so we can rebuild something better. And you say this all the time on your show. I mean, they just keep kicking the can down the road. And that's exactly, it was a perfect illustration just this week.
Right.
They're
voting in policies that hurt them. They think that a backstop is good. They don't realize the downstream effects of having a system that has these circuit breakers and top-down control and the ability to manipulate money and interest rates. They don't understand why that's bad for them. And I think that that's our greatest challenge and duty as educators, is to help people see through this system that has convinced us that inflation, it's okay for it to just be baked in the cake. And it's okay that your home has become your savings account. And I mean, people cheer the system on, right? They're like, oh my God, my house, I bought it for $100,000 and now it's worth $450,000. This is amazing. Okay, well, let's talk about how amazing that is. How far have your wages gone up in that time, right? There are winners and losers that are chosen not by free market forces in our current financial system. They are chosen by the fact that there is a monopoly over money and there are people who are closest to the source of money printing. And when you allow for power to concentrate first economically like that, it also results in the concentration of political power. And that's why we need something that I think Larry Lepard said this on my show, that strikes at the heart of that and dismembers it in a gentle way, actually in a peaceful way. And that is Bitcoin. And I think that that would empower so many people, and it would allow for our system to actually have great things emerge, things of value. I mean, everyone, they don't understand how money works, a lot of people, but they can recognize the fact that airline service has completely declined, that the random things that they buy, the quality has deteriorated. It might be the same brand that you purchased 5 years ago and it's totally different quality. The buildings that are being put up, they're not as sturdy and strong and lasting as they once were. Everything deteriorates when at the core, you have a unit of account that can be manipulated and that some people get first access to over everyone else.
The problem is right before us. There's just such a detachment from the causes. It all comes back to politics or social wars or whatever. And I think that's what that's why I love when you talk to someone like Larry Lepard. I had him on the show a couple months ago, and it's like they do such a good job of articulating exactly what's going on. And if I could just get, there's so many people in my life, if I could just get them to spend an hour listening to Larry or Luke Grohman or Preston or so many, you know, James Lavish to talk about this, I think their eyes would just, you know, their jaw would hit the floor. They just have no concept of it. So speaking of the recent drawdown, which we've rebounded back as Bitcoin is unpredictably does, did you start getting questions like, hey, we're sub 50,000, like what's going on? Should I sell? Like, did you have any of that? Or how do you respond to people who might bring that sort of thing to your attention?
No, I did not get that, because I think by now, especially after the massive FTX meltdown that we had in 2022, people know that when the price of Bitcoin goes down, I'm actually in a position where I'm buying, and actually I'm excited in a way because I can stack more, at least temporarily. How I would respond to people, I mean, you've got to zoom out, right? This is the long-term savings technology. This is something that is volatile in the short run, but it not only maintains, but grows your purchasing power over the long run more than anything else. And so you should not be concerned about temporary price swings. It's a very early asset. I mean, very young asset compared to everything else. It's $1 trillion market cap compared to other assets that hold hundreds of trillions in global wealth. And as we eat into that, there will be periods of volatility. I said this on Fox Business this week. I mean, it's the only thing that you can trade 24/7. So when something happens overnight or on a weekend, of course, there are going to be investors who express their fears through trading Bitcoin. There are deleveraging moments because people take on leverage. They get greedy when things are really good. So obviously that's going to impact Bitcoin, but I do think it's going to grow less and less volatile over time. And I hope that people do take the time to learn about it, because so many people have said this, but I'll just articulate it again. I don't know anyone who has studied Bitcoin for even, you know, 20 hours, much less 100, who says, oh, there's nothing here. This is just complete waste of time. I would never invest in it. And the people who have studied it and are against it, because I'm sure there are a couple in that position, I think that they're maybe bitter that they couldn't buy, or that they chose not to buy at a lower price. There are a lot of people who probably feel a little bit of pain looking at Bitcoin at $50,000 or $60,000, knowing that they could have bought it at $10,000 or $100,000.
Peter Schiff.
There are people like that. And I can relate to that feeling. I mean, there are things that I wanted to buy, and maybe it's like a dream purchase, and I've seen the cost go up, and I'm like, how can I pay? I could have bought it when it was half this price. I can't pay for it now. But I think that Bitcoin will eventually swallow everybody, and everyone will want at least even a tiny bit, because the performance is going to speak for itself. At some point that overrides ego. At least I hope so.
Yeah. Okay. So I know you are a little bit shorter on time today, but I do want to talk about, I think I heard you and Sam on a podcast a month or two ago talking about an event that you were planning, I believe maybe for September here in St. Louis. It yes. sounded interesting. And it, by the way, if there's anything I can do to help you guys with that, let me know. But could you talk about what it is, what you're trying to accomplish? Who are you targeting with this?
Yes. So we're both new to St. Louis, and I think that this is a community that's just ripe for becoming Bitcoiners. As I mentioned earlier, a lot of people here have done really well with other investment classes, including real estate. And most people that I meet here, they just don't understand Bitcoin. They're curious. They're a little bit worried because of the price action that they've seen over the last 2 years and the crypto blowups. So we just want to be, you know, we want to be resources, and we want to make it approachable. So we're hosting a half-day event. It's called the Bitcoin Lunch and Learn at the Ritz-Carlton in Clayton, Missouri, open to the public. We just want to help people understand, what is Bitcoin? What is the investment thesis? How is it performed compared to other investment classes? And then how you actually buy and secure it, a kind of news you can use. I think it's always really helpful to help people not just learn, okay, what is Bitcoin, but how do I embrace it? How do I actually make use of it in my life? So we're really looking forward to it. I just think it's important to orange pill whoever you can in your own community. All of us can make a small difference. And we're really excited to hopefully host the first of many events like it, where we just open it up and say, hey, come learn about this in a very approachable, beginner-friendly environment. So we're going to have information on Bitcoin Lunch, bitcoinlunchandlearn.com, I think, or I'll have to correct that. Maybe it's bitcoin-lunch.com. I have to check, but we're really excited. It is in September. So if you're in St. Louis, DM me and I'll help you get a ticket.
Do you remember the date off the top of your head?
Yeah, it's September 14th, Saturday. 14th,
okay.
Yeah.
Terrific. Yeah. And how are you going about marketing this? Because obviously your online reach is large, but not necessarily predominantly St. Louis. Are you just inviting like friends, like people you know, or are you somehow getting this out to the community?
A little bit of everything. So we're finishing up the website this week, and then we're going to probably do some paid ads that are very focused on this area. I'm going to put it out on my Twitter as well, but you're right. My audience is kind of all over the place. So we just really want to target people that are in the area in St. Louis. We want to also make sure that this is very open and approachable for students. We're going to have like a student pricing, because we want young people to learn about it, why it's so important. So yeah, if you have any other ideas, we're certainly open to them, because we're excited to fill the room.
No, I think this is the sort of thing that just needs to happen more locally in a lot of communities, right?
And yeah,
it's, you know, you hear about, you know, Bitcoin Park, and like, you've got certain pockets, I think, that are probably a heavier concentration of Bitcoiners, or more of a destination for people to go to than St. Louis, as an example. Most people don't come here for fun, but
Thing too is we're bringing together different people that represent the different use cases for Bitcoin and the different, I think, viewpoints. So Sam is very much focused on the macro, the money managers, the professional investors that might already have allocations to things like equities. I'm very focused on, again, sort of the mainstream retail audience that maybe has never, some of them have never invested before. They don't know how they're invested in their retirement portfolios. And I just want it to be really approachable for women, for moms, for people that think, oh gosh, this is like not for me. It's a little intimidating. I want to be the voice for them. And it's important to just bring together different people, because when you see someone that sort of reflects something you relate to, right? Whether it's you're a woman, you might want to hear from a woman. If you're a money manager, you might want to hear from someone that has financial experience. Like, I think we all learn through voices that we can relate to.
Definitely. Okay, so I've got two more questions for you. So the first one is sort of a selfish question. So you've worked with the Bitcoin Way on online privacy and security, protecting your online life. Could you maybe just share a little bit about why as a Bitcoiner this was important, and anything about your experience?
Yeah, so I am really proud to say that I only partner with companies whose products I really use and trust. I do a lot of research, and the Bitcoin Way was recommended, I think, first through Saifedean Ammous's show. And so I was very curious, because there are certain elements of Bitcoin, or just online cybersecurity, online privacy, that for a non-technical person like me can be a little bit intimidating. And so what I was really impressed with is how easy the team makes it, how much they care, their own personal backstories that drove them to this mission, and the fact that technically they are so savvy and can just hold your hand through the process and make it very, very simple, whether you want to set up multi-sig on your own, because I think self-custody is so critical and so important, or you want to set up a VPN, or you want to talk about inheritance planning and making sure that your loved ones have that Bitcoin passed on to them. They just make things that can seem a little bit intimidating and technical at the beginning of your journey seem really, really simple. And that's empowering, because when you do something that you thought was difficult and then you actually see that you can, you're able and you can achieve it, there's something that's really motivating about that. And then you want to learn even more. You want to take the next step, or you want to help someone. And there's sort of a positive ripple effect to it. So I'm really grateful for the team, and I'm glad that we're partners as well.
Yeah, no, we are grateful as well. And we do have such a fantastic team. I'm glad to hear that we're working with you. So last question, this is one that I ask everyone. And the question is, what is an unpopular opinion that you hold, and you get bonus points if it's unpopular, even amongst Bitcoiners? And it could be anything. Saifedean's was that he doesn't like movies. So it doesn't have to be Bitcoin related, but that's a good way to make Bitcoiners upset, is focusing on something financial or political.
Okay, I'll go to a place that kind of it started with my journalism career. I am a huge believer that RF radiation, EMF radiation, is harmful to health. I've spent almost a decade studying this. I still have very close sources who send me the latest studies from all over the world on this. I think that we have corruption within our telecom lobbies, and there's a revolving door between people who are at the FCC and then leading these telecom companies, and then at the FDA, and we've seen this in health and with pharmaceuticals as well. And I am very passionate about this. I don't sleep with my iPhone on next to me. A lot of people sleep with, you know, their nightstand and their phone right next to them. And so they're constantly, when your cell phone is constantly pinging the tower, that's a form of radiation that's harmful. And I am very worried about things like that, because a lot of people don't know, or they're misinformed, because the mainstream narrative is that that's not true and that's wrong. And I will fight on that hill. And so, yeah, I don't wear an iWatch, an Apple iWatch. I don't have my Wi-Fi router anywhere near my bed or in my bedroom. I try to keep these devices away from me. Obviously, you can't avoid Wi-Fi everywhere, but I just try to minimize and do what I can in my life. And it is an unpopular opinion. And I've told people, please don't wear an Apple iWatch. It's really bad for you. And they don't believe me. And, you know, I just hope that people do their homework because I certainly have.
Okay, that's a good one. All righty, Natalie, you've got a lot of handoffs you can do here. Where can people find you, follow you, keep up with you on the this event in St. Louis? Anything you got?
Sure. So please follow me on Twitter or X at Nat Brunel. My show is called Coin Stories. It's on every platform, YouTube, all the audio podcasting shows. I have a newsletter, thenewsblock.substack.com, which now Sam has recently taken the charge on. And it's an awesome way to have an update that's about 10 minutes a week. You'll be fully updated on what's happening in Bitcoin and the global economy. We will have that Bitcoin Lunch and Learn here in St. Louis. The website will be done hopefully by the time you run this. So hopefully you can put it on the screen. And yeah, just DM me too. I try to go through my DMs. I'm a little slow, but I really like to hear from people and I love getting feedback and guest suggestions.
Fantastic. Natalie, thank you so much for taking time. This has been a lot of fun and hope to have you on again sometime in the future.
Thanks for having me.
All righty. Cheers, everyone. And that's a wrap. Again, I hope you enjoyed this conversation. I know I sure did. I'm looking forward to getting to connect with Natalie and Sam and hopefully contributing to the event that they've got going on and helping where I can. It's so important to bring local communities together to teach them about Bitcoin. There are so many people who have been unreached in understanding this important technology. We did find out the website. It is bitcoin-lunch.com. So that's where you need to head if you want to learn more about this event that they're hosting in St. Louis. And of course, if you need help with Bitcoin self-custody, protecting your online life with proper privacy and security, if you need help with Plan B options for yourself or your family, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Schedule a time to chat with a member of our team. We'd love to share what it is that we do, how we help, and see if it might be a fit for you. Of course, subscribe to our YouTube channel, Rumble, wherever you are listening to your podcasts. And you can follow The Bitcoin Way on Twitter at @TheBitcoinWay_ or myself at @TheOtherMJordan. And I think that's all I've got for you this week. We'll be back again, obviously, with another podcast next week. Until next time, this is Michael signing off.